Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Ballet continues its season with a double bill that features the work of two top young choreographers, two classic pieces of music, and a collaboration between four arts organizations in our city as the company presents the Oklahoma premiere of Nicolo Fonte's Bolero, along with a repeat staging of Ma Kong's Carmina Burana, which involves not only the Tulsa Symphony, which will perform both works, but also the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus and the Tulsa Opera Choruses, who will sing composer Carl Orff's masterwork. My guests today are the two choreographers for the weekend performances. Ma Kong is a well-known figure in our city, the resident choreographer for the Tulsa Ballet, continuing a 15-year collaboration with the company that began as a dancer. Since his first choreographic work in 2004, Kong has created original work for Houston Ballet, Ballet Met, the Smuin Ballet in San Francisco, and the Kennedy Center's Dance Across America, among others. Nicolo Fonte has honed his craft as a dancer, then choreographer for Nacho Duato's Spanish National Dance Company in Madrid. Currently, he's the resident choreographer for Ballet West, and he's created and staged works with most of Europe's top ballet companies and U.S. companies ranging from Washington Ballet and the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet to Oregon Ballet Theater, where Bolero had its premiere, and Complexions Contemporary Ballet. The two choreographers join us today on Studio Tulsa. Ma Kong and Nicolo Fonte, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I have a lot of choreographic talent here in this room today, and it's a pleasure to speak with both of you. Now, you're both coming back to this work. Ma, it's been a few years since you've done Carmina Burana. I think you did an Australian production this past summer, I believe. of Bolero. Mm-hmm. But when you come back to a work, is there things that you necessarily change? How do you look at the work? Is the work set, or is it always a work in progress? Nicolo?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think the work is pretty much set, and I wouldn't really change the overall structure of it. I mean, that's sort of what made the piece, and it's been successful everywhere it's been danced, luckily. So I wouldn't really tamper with that too much. But I do sort of tweak a little bit here and there, little things, that little timings that I think maybe work better with this group of people that's in front of me today, meaning Tulsa Ballet, for example. So, you know, in that sense, there's little adjustments here and there. But overall, it's recognizable. You would recognize the piece no matter where you saw it on whatever company was dancing it.
And for you, Ma, it's been a few years since you've looked back at Carmina Burana, and this was your first big step up to a 50-minute ballet. What's the process like for you?
Just like Nicolo was saying, like there's actually no major change for Carmina Burana since 2006. The process has been great for restaging at this time, and I did a slightly little bit adjustment for the transitions and to make it a little bit more clean and on stage, and you know, one section to another section would be hooked up much tighter than before. So when audience look at it, it will be much more connected. So it has been a great process, and the dancers are a completely new generation. They're all very energetic, and they're all quite beautiful and very excited for this amazing collaboration with the five different organizations in Tulsa to present this production.
Yeah. Now, both of these works have been performed in Tulsa before. Bolero has, hasn't it?
No,
it's not.
No, okay, this is a Tulsa premiere. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the case of Carmina Burana, you do have a sort of a new generation of dancers dancing it. So they're coming at it completely fresh, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's quite nice that we still have a couple, we say old dancers, now became to ballet masters, choreographers, or stagers such as Alfonso, Ali, and myself that maintain this company actually can give the original touch to those new dancers and give them, you know, tell them what to react and how to approach this kind of feeling. So it has been quite nice to see the new generations actually step up.
Your work is familiar to the dancers, but this is a new work for the dancers in Bolero, Nicolo.
Right.
So how do you begin your process of feeling out what is a new dance company for you, although you know some of the dancers from previous productions?
Yeah, I mean, I worked with Tulsa Ballet last two seasons ago, but it was about a year and a half ago in April or May of 2013. So I knew a lot of them already. But in fact, I wasn't able to be here during the first week of the rehearsal period. So I sent an assistant, and she came and began the process. And basically, she did the casting. It was, you know, I was recommending and suggesting certain people for certain roles, but ultimately she was combining those people together and looking at it and sort of seeing what she thought worked best. And more or less, I went with what she did, more or less. There were some minor changes in the casting and stuff. So, yeah, when a stager comes and does it for you, I mean, basically they're being very, very faithful to what they think or know the choreography is. And then the choreographer comes and says, oh, well, you know, don't be so rigid. It doesn't have to be like that. It can be like this, you know. And then they're all like, then there's confusion for the first couple of hours. And then everybody sort of settles down and understands that the process can be something less rigid and more open and flexible.
But, of course, if the assistant were more flexible and open.
Oh, it would be a disaster. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that's their job. I mean, that's their job to be as faithful as possible to what they think or believe or know the choreography is, you know. So she did a great job. But I really do think the only person that can really infuse the piece with its spirit and intent and all that is the choreographer. So the choreographer has to come and work on it.
Both of you are resident choreographers, Ma for Tulsa Ballet, Niccolo for Ballet West. Is there a certain level of comfort when you're working as the resident choreographer, or just the fate of being a choreographer means you're going to companies all around the country if you're successful, as you both are? So there's no special relationship, or is there a special relationship with your own sort of company, if you will?
To me, I think there's definitely a special relationship with the company. And for me, this is my 15th year with the Tulsa Ballet. And I grew up with this company, and I have a very special relationship with this company. And working with the dancers, just to educate them how we want to approach company's goal, it has been such a great pleasure. So when I go to other company that I have to learn a new faces and new names and new individuals. So that's quite challenging. So I find much more easier to work with the Tulsa Ballet because I know this company pretty well.
And I think being with a company for 15 years, it would, you know, you saw them when they were in the core, they move up,
yeah.
You know, and you just see this progress over
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. And, you know, seeing someone that who was actually in a quarter ballet and grow up in a demi-solos and two solos and two principal and see that process is quite amazing too.
Niccolo, for you at Ballet West?
It's a fairly recent appointment. It started in the 2012-2013 season. So, but I do feel a kind of deeper connection with them. I think anytime, you know, you take on any project, you know, you decide, oh, I need to choreograph this work, or I want to choreograph this work, or I'm being asked to do this type of work. It's always daunting. It's always challenging. It's always blissful. It's all of the above. But somehow with a company that you're the resident choreographer for, even though this has been not that long yet, what I find most in the collaborative process with them is that they really can now tap into when I'm off. They know when I'm having a not good day, and they can push me along. No. And that's really interesting to me. And for me, that's really a true collaboration. I don't need them to generate material for me. I can generate my own material. And maybe it's a question of ego. My ego is so healthy that I'm fine with generating my own material. But when they know I'm having a really off day, they start to collaborate in a way. And I've noticed this developing as time goes on. That they're saying, well, we did this yesterday. What about this? And we could do this. We can go there. We can try this. We can do this. And all this kinds of stuff. And it's not like they're trying to make up steps for me, but they're sort of poking me a little with ideas. And that's really, really great. Really, really fascinating.
I would be interested in how that works because, you know, it is a collaboration, but it's sort of like Animal Farm. Some are more equal than others, and the choreographer has the final say. So
right.
It's still a subordinate master relationship in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, speaking for myself, you know, I'm drawn to those people who will, you know, sort of jump off the page and be like, well, we can do this and we can do that. I mean, I like to be around creative people. I'm not intimidated by creativity. I actually encourage it. I want it. I want people who actually work on their own choreography to be in my pieces and so on and so forth. I mean, of course, in the end, I am the one who makes the final decisions, and that's clear to them, and it's very clear to me as well. I don't get caught up in that kind of struggle of power. You know, it's clear where the decisions are made.
Well, do you find that as well when you're sort of having an off choreographic day that your dancers will sort of push you along to have a better day?
Yeah, actually, that's I completely agree with Nicholas, what he's saying. And it's almost like it's mind-challenging when you actually create something on the dancers. And actually, they give you this sort of like tendency that, let's say, if you create this movement on them and they turn around, they automatically just by accent turn into something else. But when you look at it, you're like, oh my gosh, that's even better than what I thought. So actually, that happened by their sort of like a creativity, but in my eye, and maybe I just adding on a little bit of arms and legs, how I want to shape the choreography, and just having the final decision.
Well, I would assume that a company where you work with regularly, even though it's only been a few years, they're understanding your vocabulary a lot better, your dance vocabulary. And so they might instinctually sort of move to some of that vocabulary.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. Yeah. It's very nice, you know, not to have to start at zero, you know, every time you start a new process.
Right.
You know, they know already. I mean, the other challenge is, you know, how do I keep making this new and fresh for them and for me? But that's great, because that's when you have to dig deeper.
Take us back to when these ballets were created. Carmina Burana was one of your first big steps up, and it was actually the music was chosen for you, wasn't it?
I mean,
we think of the choreographers being inspired by music to create this, but this was actually more of a commission than most.
Absolutely, and this music is just so fascinating, and every time I hear it, it just gives me goosebumps. So it's so inspiring, and the creating process actually, from what I remember in 2006, actually was quite fast. I did it. I created less than 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
For, yeah, 50 minutes ballet.
Yeah. And were you familiar with Carmina Burana before you went into this?
I have done John Butler's version of Carmina Burana when I joined the company. And I also saw some other versions of Carmina Burana. And some of them are very modernized. And when I look at the difference, actually, it was quite fascinating. As far as for the story of Carmina Burana, actually, I did a little bit of study just right before the creating process.
So the fortune wheel.
Right, right. And I really wanted to respect the original, you know, Carmina Burana story. But
they're very earthy. They're very earthy poems.
Very earthy, yes, yes. But I don't want to make the ballet sound like a story. So I just wanted to insert a very strong message about humanity and show it to the audience.
Now, Bolero, it's sort of a staple in the choreographic repertoire, but I think it can be a challenge because, you know, choreographers thrive on changing tempos. And here you have this just sort of inexorable crescendo for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that can, I think that would be a challenge to sustain that intensity for so long. And of course, this ballet does that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unremitting, you know, and you're in the studio. But I actually, once I agreed to do it, which funnily enough, I wasn't, you know, I didn't choose to do it either. And it was commissioned in 2008 by Oregon Ballet Theater. And, you know, when I was first asked to do it, I said no. I said, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to go near that music. I'm not touching it.
Is it because there's so much choreographic baggage.
Baggage and the ice skaters and, you know, everybody who used it, you know, it's like, there's, it's just like, you know, I didn't want to be the guy who did a sort of so-so bolero, and I didn't have any real feeling for
it. And passion for
it. Right. Yeah. So then I listened to it, and then I thought, okay, well, this is actually a pretty fabulous piece of music, and it does sort of kind of make you want to get up and dance. And, you know, circumstances would have, he actually came back to me and then asked me again once I had said no, would you please reconsider? You know, I really, really think you would make a good one. So when I agreed to do it, I had to find my way into the piece. And, you know, and I wasn't interested in making a Spanish number. And so I had to find my way in. And so I went to the source, which was Ravel. And I found some really interesting things about Ravel and how he felt about the music and what he wanted for the original ballet, which was really interesting. He thought the music was very mechanical in nature, and he envisioned a kind of factory setting for the stage setting of the ballet that reflected the Industrial Revolution that was happening at the
time.
That's
right. You have to remember this is George Antheil, yeah. Ballet Mécanique.
That's it.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, this whole thing of industrialization. Right.
And so, of course, that never really came to pass, but that was a really interesting point of departure for me.
And it was interesting because the melody is such a beautiful lyrical melody.
Yeah. You well, he was working on Spanish tunes at the time, and somehow the whole thing kind of morphed together. You know, it's funny because he also didn't think much of the music, and, you know, lo and behold, it turned out to be, you know, his greatest hit. So, but back to your original comment about how it's, you know, relentless or unremitting, you know, the same thing over and over and over again. I actually find that fascinating, and actually, in some ways, like Ma, I also choreographed it very quickly. It just choreographed itself. It was done like in 8 days or something. It was just so fast. And it actually freed me up having that steady, steady rhythm the whole time. I could do what I want. I followed it and I broke it up and I played with it and I did all sorts of faster tempo, slower tempo. You know, it just kind of allowed for a kind of rhythmical freedom in the process. So.
And I guess as the textures build, of the orchestral texture builds and it crescendos, you add more dancers. Although I think it, one of the biggest parts, you go to a pas de deux.
Yeah, I mean, it starts, the stage is actually quite congested with the scenic element in the beginning. And then as the orchestra grows, more players start playing and the music gets more and more rich and lush. Actually, all those scenic elements fly away. So the louder the sound landscape gets, the more minimal the stage gets, which I thought was an interesting juxtaposition. But then the dancing gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more powerful and more passionate and sensual in a way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the scheme that I had was to approach it in a very contemporary way, but not negate that it was actually Bolero. That in some ways, it's a 16-minute seduction. So I had to incorporate that into the work somehow, but I didn't want to just do it in the most obvious way.
Well, my guests today are Niccolò Fonte, the resident choreographer for Ballet West, Ma Kong, the resident choreographer for Tulsa Ballet. You can see their work this weekend in a big production of Carmina Burana and Bolero. That's the Tulsa premiere of Bolero, Friday and Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Both the pieces will feature the symphony, but also you have Tulsa Oratorio Chorus, Tulsa Opera Chorus, and I'm probably leaving somebody out, but I can't remember who it is now, but I think that's enough groups right there collaborating on that.
Yeah.
And that's important, I think.
Yeah, it's very important. Actually, if I'm not miscounting, there will be close to 200 people performing for the audience, and they're, you know, all different skills and all different ages, and from children and to the oldest one probably would be 70 and you know, 75, and so it's going to be very exciting.
Now, a lot of Carmina Burana is not known as much as Bolero, but the O Fortuna motif, which opens the piece and also closes the piece, is as well known as Bolero. How do you approach doing a piece of music that people, even if they don't know what it's about, they feel like they know it, as in that particular part of Carmina Burana?
Yeah, and I think that Wheel of Fortune is almost like a signature to the music and to the image of this ballet as well. When I listen to this music, it's very strange that I just had that Wheel of Fortune spinning in my head. Just going from, you know, listening the very first piece of the ballet and to the end. And it's almost like someone's life and going around and around. So that's why I wanted to, how do you say, symbolize that Wheel of Fortune from the beginning and to the end.
When you're thinking of creating a ballet and you're looking for music, or when you're listening to music with sort of an ear for, do you listen to music as if, that could be a ballet someday, or that I'll never ever want to do something like that. Is that how you listen to music in general?
Yeah, I think that's a really clear image. When I listen to some music and I can right away, I know that I want it, that I will just right away, I download it and I save it in a pocket and just use it.
And yeah, and maybe some time down the road. Is that how
you
listen to music?
Yeah, I mean, I bank a lot of music. Yeah, you know, you just kind of, it sits in the vault until it's ready.
Yeah. A lot of times when choreographers come in to do a mixed bill like this is, mm-hmm. one choreographer comes in for a week and then the other choreographer comes in for another week. And I know that's been the case, but with Ma being in residence here, you probably have had more conversations together, or is it mostly you're focusing on your own work, you don't have a chance to really talk about things choreographers talk about, or has that been possible during this particular run?
Well, actually, you know, I have known Nikki since 2003, I guess. And yeah. At that time, I'm still
a dancer.
I was still a dancer, mm-hmm. and I danced his creation. So I know him very well in his style. So just like the other day, even though we're not even chatting because we're busy for the different rehearsals, because mm-hmm. we're working at different studios. But that day, when I was sitting in the studio and watching him just, you know, educate the dancers and running the rehearsals, that's just really refreshing to me as a dancer at that time. You know, I just recall all the image that when I was a dancer that working with him. So that was quite nice. So there was a little bit of that kind of a conversation, but without actually the conversation. It's mine.
And for you, are you trying to pick when you have a chance to sit down with another choreographer, or is it just so... You're so focused on getting your own work.
We usually don't have enough time, and those opportunities don't usually appear, but I really would love it. I mean, I really would. I really would love to sit down and have like a powwow with, you know, my colleagues and sort of just talk about things, you know, important things like how do you renew yourself? What inspires you? You know, all sorts of things. I mean, I think it would be really, really great. I mean, maybe we should start like a workshop or something. it happened to me once in a different company situation that three of us were together and we were all in the same hotel and we hung out one evening over several bottles of champagne. And it was really an interesting thing. So I wish that we had time to, you know, to often do that. It would be really interesting to me.
Niccolò and Ma, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Choreographers Niccolò Fonte and Ma Kong speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. You can see their works, Bolero and Carmina Burana, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. For more information about Tulsa Ballet, visit tulsaballet.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Now we present a conversation from the StoryCorps booth located in the Guthrie Green in downtown Tulsa. Here's a conversation between Dan and Felisa Hilbert, a married couple living in Broken Arrow. They met while both were doing missionary work in Mexico. Felisa is originally from there, while Dan grew up all over the United States since his father was in the military. Now they have three kids, and Dan himself has recently retired from the Army. In this interview recorded earlier this month, Dan asked Felisa about her decision to be a stay-at-home mom, her volunteering and community outreach activities, and finally, the creation and development of a multicultural diversity festival several years ago. It's an event that continues in Broken Arrow to this day.
Now, I decided to stay home, and the reason I decided to stay home is because in my culture, you don't leave kids. I grew up in a family that was very traditional. Moms stay home and take care of their kids and husband and family, but I thought it was my choice to do it. But I knew what it will do to my kids to leave them in their care and go and preach to others that they had to build these relationships.
Well, I remember what you said there. I remember feeling so guilty. Here you are with a master's degree level of study in psychiatric nursing. You could have pulled down way more money than I ever was doing at the time, and even after I went in the military. And I just remember your comment when I told you, hey, how about we trade places? I just felt bad that here you barely completed your thesis and married me. And you said, hey, look, we only do this once. If we mess it up with our kids, it's forever. But that didn't stop you doing humanitarian and charitable work. Well, I mean, you still were active in it one way or the other.
I knew that I want to stay home, but that don't mean that I want to always choose the light to be at home like a full time for 7 and just clean the house and be barefoot.
Barefoot and pregnant is the saying.
Pregnant. Yeah, I knew that I had so much. I saw the community and whatever place we moved, I always study the community and look for the needs of the community. And I decided, okay, I can organize this thing, this program here. It will help this woman, so I can organize this. Or I will go to the shelter, or I will stay in the church, organize something. And I knew that would keep me busy, and I will be doing the things I love to do, because service is engraved in my soul. It made me so happy. And that's part of who I am. I cannot see a need and not do nothing.
Well, long story short, we come to Oklahoma without any plans to be here more than 3 years, possibly two was all. Never planned to retire from the Army here, but, well, medical situation got in the way there. By then, we'd been married some 15-odd years. When our youngest finally got to school is when you asked if you'd go get a job full-time or how would I recommend you volunteer or where to volunteer. And, you know, gosh, that hasn't been that long ago, 15 years ago. To me, it seems like where you went into high gear.
I volunteer in the community a lot, and PTA started at the local level. And I don't know, I went for people coming from another country, the people who come, I feel like I had to prove myself. I feel like I had to prove myself for people to take me serious. Sometimes the comments they were, and I just, that made me more determined to say that this was happening to me. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that I will do something to make sure that that not happened to other people who don't have an education.
I think one of the best things you did to that end was the Multicultural Diversity Festival. Look what that's grown into. How many years have you done that?
9 years, and funding the PTA, who's multicultural, for 25 different countries. Community PTA.
Well, you started with just 12 that first year. You had as many as over 30 in some years represented there.
Yeah, and I think I got tired of hearing educators saying that the minority, the parents, don't care, that they don't come to parent teaching conference or PTA meetings. And I told them, are you offering them what they need to? Are you sending the translation forms? Because believe me, they will not cross the border to not care. The reason they are here is because they care enough that they want to sacrifice. And I just got tired of that, and I decided, okay, what can I do to show the American people or the school community, the community, the parents really care? And I thought, something simple. What about I teach them how to share their culture, something they are? Mm-hmm. And we start with 12 countries. You remember how much I had to make, and I did all the work, and I still find all the money and fundraise. But from that program, I went to other places, and later I had to go to D.C., the Department of Education, and from there, the United Nations.
I was always proud to see that you had your own thing outside of me. It didn't all depend on me. You could always stand on your own 2 feet. I'd go away. I could always come home to a surprise of something you did while I was gone, whether you planned it that way or not. And I've just been so amazed and admiring of what you've done with the Multicultural Diversity Festival, taking all these people that represent different cultures and languages and so forth, setting them up so they can tell their story, they can do their performances.
I think my hope really is to inspire young people to make a difference, that no matter where you are, you can do something. You can change life.
Dan and Felisa Hilbert speaking at the StoryCorps mobile booth in downtown Tulsa at the Guthrie Green. Keep listening to Studio Tulsa over the next few weeks for more conversations from StoryCorps. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.